Hi, this is Paula Morrell, and welcome to the Tales from the South podcast.
I love you, but chances are you won't give me a chance to be with you. But chances are you won't give me a chance to be.
How's everybody doing tonight? So how about tonight's music by Brad Williams? Y'all like Brad? With healthy doses of bluegrass, feel-good rock and roll, gospel, and country, Brad Williams developed his own style of pure get-down mountain music. Born and raised in Northeast Arkansas, Brad grew up just miles from Johnny Cash's homestead. Brad Williams currently fronts the Arkansas country band, The Salty Dogs. The Salty Dogs' music may be purchased at tonight's show or on iTunes or your favorite internet store. More can be heard at thesaltydogs.net. All right, well, welcome to Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, and to a very special edition of Tales from the South, a monthly series we call the Tin Roof Project, where well-known Southerners bring their own true stories to life. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, all right here in North Little Rock, Arkansas. And I'm your host, Paula Morrell. On my left here, strumming his 1931 National Resonator, is blues guitarist Mark Simpson. Mark has performed at the legendary King Biscuit Blues Festival in Helena, Arkansas, among many other festivals nationwide. He wrote our theme music and plays for us live each week. And how about our set back here? Y'all like our set? Tonight, we are thrilled to feature our tin roofer, Kevin Cressy's paintings. All three of these are Kevin's. And this piece here, which is entitled Weightlessness Versus Gravity, which is for sale. Our listeners can find out more about this painting and Kevin at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. All right, are y'all ready for some Southern-style storytelling? Sculptor Kevin Cressy has supported his family solely as an artist for 15 years. He has exhibited his work across the country, including New York, New York, Washington, D.C., Memphis, Tennessee, and Atlanta, Georgia, as well as in Lucca, Italy. Cressy has been awarded painting fellowships from the National Endowment for the Arts, Mid-America Arts Alliance, and the Arkansas Arts Council. His work is in private collections worldwide and in public spaces throughout Arkansas, and has received multiple awards, including several awards in the Arkansas Arts Center annual Delta competition. Kevin has been featured in the Arkansas Times, Arkansas Democrat Gazette, the North Little Rock Times, the Little Rock Free Press, Active Years Magazine, and Soiree Magazine. He has also been featured in pieces produced by the local affiliates of ABC, CBS, and PBS Television, as well as a film short by Garrett Lakin. The 10th of 11 children, Kevin was born in North Little Rock, Arkansas, and now lives in Little Rock with his wife, Bridget, and their three children. Tonight, Kevin takes us to a Hillcrest gallery, a church picnic, and then his backyard, all for art's sake in The Eye of the Beholder. Ladies and gentlemen, Kevin Cressy.
There I was, hammer and nail in hand, hanging one of my paintings for my upcoming show at Gallery 26 in Little Rock, where I'd had numerous shows in the past. The opening was later that evening, and I was hanging the rest of the pieces and just touching up some of the frames. A girl pulled up and came inside the gallery. She had some business to do with Renee, who owns the gallery. When she finished, she came over and said, is this all your work? I said, yes, it is. She said, oh, it's just wonderful. I said, oh, well, you know, thank you. Thank you very much. And then she said, I really, really love this one. I stepped back and I stood beside her. She was referring to a large painting of my wife, Bridget, when she was pregnant. Now, the painting was of Bridget in the bathtub on her side, and it was painted from the viewpoint of up above, looking down on her. It was very, very tastefully done, I must add. She said, oh yeah, this is just amazing. I said, well, thank you so much. I have to admit, I had been feeling kind of apprehensive about the painting, not because of the subject matter, but I was just a little worried that the color palette was a little dark, that, you know, the whole painting could have used some lightening, and I just wasn't there yet with it. And so she was so enthusiastic about the painting that it really helped me feel so much better about it. And then she said, I have to ask you something. She says, what on earth made you think to do a painting of a pregnant guy? I was like, what? I was stunned. I said, that's no guy, that's my wife. And she was, I'm sorry. I didn't mean. I thought it was a mustache. A mustache. I was like, no. It was just the window was over here. It was just the light. The light was coming down, and it was creating a shadow. I was stammering. She was stammering. She was mortified. I was mortified. If Bridget had been there, she would have thought it was funny. But I told her, hey, it's no big deal. It's fine. It's fine, really. So as soon as she left, I turned that painting around as fast as I could, put it up against the wall. I told Renee, I'll be right back. I rushed home. I got my doctor's bag of paints. I darted back, checked the time, hovered over the patient, and started to perform the mustache-ectomy. You know, later, though, I was thinking, maybe I should have just completely gone the other way and just painted a full beard. So 6 months later, I picked up a friend's husband, Mick, who had just moved from Amsterdam to Little Rock. And we were on our way to a church festival where I was going to be doing a sculpture demonstration. Now, since Mick had moved from one of the most liberal places on the planet to the Southern Bible Belt, my friend was hoping that some of her guy friends could, you know, hang out with him and try to help soften the blow of this culture shock he was experiencing. Now, the theme of this festival was the 23rd Psalm. And my painter friend, Bob, who asked me to do the demonstration, said that if I could be persuaded to sculpt a shepherd, they would buy the sculpture as a gift for a retiring preacher in the church. Well, you know, many times you can meet potential clients doing this, and it was a guaranteed sale. So for me, you know, it's a slam dunk. So when I hung up the phone, I realized I needed someone to be a model for the shepherd. And that's when I thought of Mick from Amsterdam. You know, he needed money, I needed a model. we'd have some time to hang out together. Everybody wins. So I called him up, and he said he'd do it. So on the way to the church, I told him, I thought this is going to be like one of the church picnics, you know, I grew up with, you know, games for the kids and cotton candy and some balloons and stuff like that. And Mick mentioned that when he grew up and still was a complete atheist. And I also couldn't help but notice that Mick had that European habit of rolling his own cigarettes. And apparently that day he had been using some of his special Amsterdam blend. Because he was completely stoned. I thought, this could be an interesting day. So we arrived at the large church campus, a lot of buildings. But I got there and I didn't see any banners or flags or balloons, nothing. And I'm looking around, driving around, and we see some cars that are parked over on one side. So we move over there, and then there's Bob, and he waves us in. And so he leads us into a large hall. And what I saw in there did not resemble a festival or a fair in any way, shape, or form. There were round tables of tin with white tablecloths on them. And it was filled with only adults. And there was a large stage-like area that was cleared out in front. Now, over on the far end was a woman who had her watercolors displayed, and she had her little apron on, and she was working on a watercolor. And on the other end was my old friend John, who I hadn't seen in years, and he was working on oil paintings. And so Mick and I are to be right in the middle, center stage in front of all of this. So I set up my sculpture stand, and I give Mick his shepherd's robe to wear. You know, actually, it was just part of a cheap Halloween costume of, like, the Grim Reaper or a Death Eater or something like that. But you pair it with a walking stick and a socially reclusive, skinny guy with glasses from the Netherlands. And presto, you have a shepherd. Now, Bob is an outgoing, friendly guy anyway, but you give this guy a microphone, and it's like he's had a game show for years. I mean, he's up there, and he's working the crowd, and he's telling everybody about how excited he is. And then he goes over, and he talks to the watercolor woman, and she tells how excited she is to be there. And then she starts talking about her personal relationship with Jesus and everything he's done in her life. And Bob asked her, which of the three lessons are you going to be exploring today? Oh, I just flushed with panic. I was like, what three lessons? And I was like, I knew I should have read through all that literature that Bob sent me in the mail. You know, all I really remember from our conversation was 23rd Psalm Festival, Sculpt Shepherd, guaranteed sale. Bob finished his conversation with the woman, and he starts striding towards me. And I felt like one of those little kids that if I could just close my eyes, you know, maybe he won't notice me. And to my amazement, he walked right past me over to John doing the oil paintings. And I was like, okay, if I can just kind of listen to what they're saying, I should be able to catch on. And I think I should be able to fake my way through the rest of this. Bob starts talking with John, and to my amazement, John starts reciting long Bible verses from memory. I realized I was dead meat. I was just... See, I was raised Catholic, and Catholics just aren't Bible verse reciters. You know, when I was growing up, I never heard two Catholics talking, saying, well, as it says in Leviticus, chapter 3, verses 14 through 17. I mean, it's just, whew. You know, we Catholics were just too busy. We were too busy feeling guilty about things we had only heard of. But I knew enough to know that the 23rd Psalm was not the answer to this question that Bob kept asking. I mean, the 23rd Psalm is religious basic addition. And what they were talking about was like religious advanced trigonometry. I had no idea. And then suddenly a whole another layer of panic set in, because I thought, what if Bob wants to talk to Mick? You know, I mean, I could see Bob wanting to include Mick, and well, Kevin, who's your shepherd? Well, Bob, this is my stoned atheist friend from Amsterdam. Who's wearing a Halloween Death Eater costume. Yeah, would you like to ask him some questions? So, Bob finished with John, and he started a very kind and a very complimentary introduction to yours truly. And I just felt like I was in one of those dreams where you're in a crowded stadium and there's the spotlight on you, and but you're sitting on a toilet. It's like, Bob comes over and he asks me some kind of easy questions, and I'm trying to just banter and give some witty responses, but my Teflon suit of armor was starting to fall apart from his further questioning, and then finally Bob goes in for the kill. So, Kevin, which of the three lessons are you going to do today? Well, thinking that the best defense is a good offense, I calmed down, I leaned into the microphone, and I said, well, Bob, actually, I'm going to be touching on two of the three lessons today. Only, I'm not telling you which two. You all will have to figure it out on your own. Bob goes, whoa. And the crowd echoed, "Whoa!" Bob smiled and he wheeled around and we was back to talking to the audience again. The dumbest kid in the whole class suddenly skyrocketed to being the most profound teacher of something he knew nothing about. When we were done, I was cleaning up and collecting my tools, and Mick had taken off his robe, and he was sitting behind me on this long seating area. And this older woman came up, and she sat down next to Mick. And I could hear her say, "Even though you don't have your shepherd's robe on right now, I have to tell you, I feel such a sense of holiness from you." I was about to combust with laughter. I was biting my cheeks. I turned around and looked, and Mick was too stoned to look her in the eyes. So he was just looking down at his feet, which I'm sure she took as a sign of his deep humility. And he just put up a hand, almost like to give a blessing, and just said, "Thank you, there, ma'am. Thank you." Last week, I was sitting in my backyard, and I was thinking about the lady from the gallery and the church picnic, and I realized how everything in this life, it depends on how we see it and what our point of view is. So for me, a tender and loving portrait of my pregnant wife, it can be seen with equal validity as a thought-provoking painting about a woman's role versus a man's role in our society. And my comical take on this juxtaposition of my stoned atheist friend being in this church setting can be seen with equal validity as an image of piety and inspiration to someone else. So how we color our view of the world, whether it be with cynicism or compassion or joy or curiosity or anything, it's all up to the eye of the beholder. Now, for me, I choose to keep my eyes behind a pair of big old gaudy rhinestone beaded star-shaped rose-colored glasses. Thank you all so much for listening.
So thank you so much, Kevin Cressy, for being on the Tin Roof Project here at Tales from the South. In the first part of your story, in the gallery with the lady, it's about her point of view of the piece. But it's also about criticism and her critique of the painting. As an artist, is this something that you have to deal with a lot, criticism? And are there other stories about critiques that were not from such an innocent place?
Well, how many weeks do we have to go through this? Well, actually, my first gallery show. Back then, the Arkansas Gazette was still in business, and they actually had an art critic, and he reviewed my first show. And I knew I was in trouble when I knew the day that the piece was coming out. And I was lying in bed, and the answering machine was in the other room, and I heard beep. "Kevin, that guy just doesn't know what he's talking about. You just keep working. You're doing great." You know, and I was like, and then beep. "Oh, hey, dude, man, you know, it's gonna be all right, dude." Beep. I was like, oh no. So I went and got the paper, and my favorite quote from the paper was, "Cressy obviously loves to paint. He uses about 50 gallons of oil paint on expensive cold press paper, but leaves the viewer wondering why." And, you know, it's nothing that 3 days in a fetal position sucking your thumb won't, you know, get you over, you know, so. Bridget thought this one was funny. I had a show out of town in the gallery. I had one painting. It was a nude of a male and sitting cross-legged, and she the gallery owner, she said, Kevin, I think his, you know, his package is a little high. So I had my husband, Delbert, get up on the kitchen counter. And yes, I think it really is too high. You know, I had worked from the model. I didn't get to see Delbert, so I don't know. You know, I wasn't sure about the two. But I could be here for days telling you these stories. My old roommate, he had an Airedale dog, Hannah, and it was in the winter, and I had finished a new painting, and I had it in the back room with a fan on it to dry it, and I left. And I got back later that evening, and as soon as I opened the door, I could smell dog dew. And I was looking all through the house for it, and sure enough, I go to the back room, and there on the painting is a big steamy pile right on the painting. But the funny thing about it was the dog hadn't walked over the painting and pooped. It's like she got to the painting, turned around, and like, you know, put it in reverse, like beep, 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 beep. Took a dump, and then you could just see the back paw prints and then paint going off all the way through the rest of the house. So whether that came from an innocent place or not, I can't say, but she didn't.
All right, well, we have time here at the end for a few audience questions.
Kevin, when and why did you start using yourself as a model in so many of your paintings, besides the fact you're cheap?
Yes. But we've all known that for years, though, haven't we? Well, that was my answer. I was always available. I was always in the same mood as I was for the painter model experience. And yeah, you know, it was funny, but really it's just kind of keep my chops up. And a lot of times, sometimes models don't show up or, you know, you're caught in between. So it's always, I like to usually work on three pieces at a time so that you kind of get a fresh eye on each one. So yeah, I don't think I'm that narcissistic. In fact, I had a student once, this older woman, and she said, "Now, why do you always paint yourself so ugly?" And she, when I was teaching at the art center, she was one of my students. Once again, sometimes models wouldn't show up, so I'd have to jump up and model for the class. And she did a painting of me. My hair was longer than, it was probably shoulder length. She was so proud when she gave me the painting that she had done of me, and it had this lime green background, and I looked like Marlo Thomas. It looked like airbrushed, flawless skin. I had an earring, and it was like glinting gold, and I always had to keep it behind the door in case she ever came over, that I could hurry up and hang it, and you know, but she was sweet, though.
Having known you before you actually married the wonderful Bridget over here, I'm just curious as to how your artistry has changed since becoming a husband and a father to those three children.
Well, it puts on more pressure to sell the work. I know that's... I think it's all part of this natural evolution. You know, when I first started painting the figures, I would just sort of set them up there, and I was just trying to learn how to paint the figure. And then I got more interested in putting figures together and trying to make an interesting scene, and then it developed from that. And then, yeah, when I had the kids, then starting to incorporate them into the paintings. It's funny, too, because I'm trying to think. There was a painting that I had done, the first painting that I did of the twins. It was this one, and once again, it's a nude, very tastefully done, of me crouching, holding the both twins, one at my chest and one on my back. And I wanted the whole feeling of this protection that comes over you, you know, once you have kids. And I wanted this kind of animalistic feeling. And it was in the Delta, and a friend of mine was behind this couple, these two women. And the one woman was obviously kind of leading the other one and enlightening her about all the paintings. And she heard her when she got to this one, said, oh yes, now this artist is obviously very disturbed. But, you know, I think just as you get older, I mean, you know, some of these paintings, that's of my son Roman. But, I mean, I still like this play against things. That one, yeah, Gravity versus Weightlessness. It's about the adults in the back having a heavy conversation, and he's completely weightless, just enjoying it. And then a couple of paintings from the year that we spent in Lucca, where I was just painting the kids and just kind of picking up on their cues about how they were relating to the whole trip. So just trying to observe and be a good observer and be as honest as I can about the paintings. So.
Kevin, I've seen you demonstrate sculpting on many occasions, and it's truly an amazing talent. And reflecting back on the story of the church where you're demonstrating your sculpting, I can't imagine that was the worst circumstance under which you've demonstrated sculpting. So what was the worst circumstance under which you found yourself in a demonstration situation?
Okay, I got that one covered. When the Clinton Library was getting ready to open, they wanted a lot of things going on in the city so that when all these people came in from around the world for the opening of the library, they would have something to walk by and point at, I guess. So I had gotten a request to do one in the Riverfront Pavilion. And she sent me a stack of information, and I was looking under arts and crafts because I figured I'd be listed under that. And I couldn't find my name anywhere. And I was real confused, and I kept flipping through and flipping through. And then there was one listed entertainment. And then I scrolled down and I found my name listed under entertainment. And I think a sign that you've really arrived and have made it is when you are opening up for the Parkview High School mime troupe. True story. Okay.
So thank you so much, Kevin Cressy, for being on the Tin Roof Club on Carol Tells from the South. More can be found out about Kevin and his incredible artwork at his website, kevincressy.com. So how about our story and storyteller tonight? Thank you to our live audience, and thank you to UALR Public Radio. Tales from the South is presented by the Argenta Arts Foundation and Temenos Publishing Company, and our official media sponsor is AY Magazine, Arkansas's leading lifestyle publication at aymag.com. Tonight's show is sponsored by William F. Lehman Public Library, with additional support provided by the North Little Rock Visitors Bureau, the Writers Colony at Derry Hollow, and the Oxford American, the Southern Magazine of Good Writing. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, iTunes, YouTube, and Stitcher Smart Radio, and you can download and listen to our podcast on our website. More can be found at talesfromthesouth.com. Have a great night, and we'll see you next week at Starving Artist Cafe in the Argenta Arts District of North Little Rock, Arkansas, for another edition of Tales from the South. Good night, everybody.
Writer accommodations provided by Robin Wood Bed and Breakfast. More at robinwoodbnb.com. Experience Tales in person as a member of our live audience. Schedule and ticket information can be found at our website, talesfromthesouth.com. Thanks for helping keep the art of Southern style storytelling alive. And we'll see you next week, either on this station or at Starving Artist Cafe, for another edition of Tales from the South.